Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. The Medical Council of India has recently come out with guidelines for telemedicine practice. And our newest colleague here, Sunila Dixit, has written an op-ed about how exactly that might work in the context of COVID. So welcome, Sunila. Welcome to All Things Policy.
Hi, thank you. So about myself, my name is Sunila, and I work as a research analyst here at Takshashila. And I have recently completed my post-graduation in public health, and I have an undergraduate degree in international studies. So my areas of interest are to see how health and international relations can converge at a certain point, and see how I can explore the possibilities of that.
Well, welcome. We're glad to have you on board. Also joining us today is Dr. Shambhu Naik. Hi, Doc.
Hey, Anirudh. Hey, Sunila. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
So let's kind of open up the discussion to actually understanding what on earth telemedicine is. So how exactly does telemedicine work? What exactly do these guidelines aim to regulate? And how has telemedicine worked in the rest of the world?
So telemedicine is basically use of digital technology so that the bridge can be gapped between those who are not able to access medical facilities and those who provide those facilities. So it can be as simple as using text message to contact the doctor asking about any minor consultation. So telemedicine tries to bridge the gap between those who cannot access the services and those who are ready to provide those services.
So where in the world has telemedicine been used most effectively, do you think?
In Western countries, it has been used extensively. It is still in its initial stages, I would say, in countries like India. Not initial stages, but still it has much more potential. And I believe in Europe and in the USA, it has been used for a long time now. And Shambhavi, would you like to add something to that?
Yeah, so the idea of telemedicine, I think, has been promoted quite actively around the world. I don't think it has been used very effectively so far.
Why is that?
I think primarily because you require two things to start to switch to telemedicine. One, you need a really good infrastructure, so connecting the patient to the doctor. But I think the other more important part is a change in customer behavior. So if you feel ill, then you feel like you're going to a doctor. Just going and speaking to the doctor, it's by itself sometimes can have a positive impact on your well-being. And to achieve that kind of trust without seeing that doctor in front of you might be slightly difficult. So, even in our routine care, I think in the US, the US spends about $2.9 trillion on healthcare every year. And they expect that about $200 billion of this are avoidable unnecessary spending. So spending that the patient will go to see a doctor, then the nurse will spend some time on the patient. There will be some inpatient treatment sometimes. A lot of this care can be actually given from home or delivered at home. But we still prefer to go see the doctor because that's something we are used to. So the effectiveness of telemedicine, which is entirely going to be dependent on a trust factor, that needs to be built up.
That's a very interesting point. So it looks like there's two things that are basically lacking right now in the Indian context, right? The first is infrastructure, and the second is the actual trust, because people are not used to interacting with doctors in this kind of context.
Yeah, I mean, the trust is going to be, if you think about my parents, right? Forget about the doctor. When I first told them that I could pay their electricity bill online, it took them some time to are you sure? Will it get paid? Will they not cut my lights? You know, so building that kind of trust in technology itself is going to be the first part. And second part is going to be building trust in the doctor. there has to be specialized training given for doctors who are going to practice telemedicine. I think telemedicine is here to stay, and we are going to become more and more reliant on it. It is just that the way both the patients treat the doctor and the doctors treat the patient has to change, has to evolve.
So this actually brings me to a couple of questions. The first was this interesting term that you used was building up trust in technology. Not necessarily on the face of the doctor that you're seeing on the other side of the screen, but rather in the technology itself. And I think one of the myths that is most commonly thrown about telemedicine is that it's about an algorithm or an AI or something that decides what's best for you, right? And I think the new guidelines explicitly set out to tackle that. So can you tell us a bit about that, Sunila?
Yeah. The thing is, the guidelines, they are specifically talked about how the doctor should present his or her qualifications and how the doctor is registered with the state medical council or national medical council. So that is mandatory for the registered medical practitioners before they start using telemedicine for consultation. So I guess that can help with the trust factor, I guess. And another thing is, I think they... the government should involve the representatives of community as well, so that if the leaders of the community promote it, I guess it is more likely the people will also believe it and start using more.
So you're suggesting that the government should be promoting, like, people accessing public health, the public healthcare system using telemedicine, right?
Right.
Okay, that's an interesting point.
And I think, Madhira, if I can just add in here, I think now is actually a good time to get people primed to telemedicine, primarily because access to doctor is limited and is a risk in our current situation. So we are actually in a good space to now build up that infrastructure and change and nudge people to using telemedicine more.
So what kind of infrastructure and nudges are we talking about? Can you give us a little detail here?
Okay, so about the infrastructure, so there are apps that have been developed for telemedicine, not just by the government, but also by the private sector. And the most common example that can be given is of Narayan Hrudayalaya in Karnataka. So yeah, there are many apps like Practo, and there are other projects like Onconet and the National Rural TM Network. So the thing is, the infrastructure that is needed for the telemedicine to be facilitated, there needs to be training among the medical practitioners and as well as the IT experts out there. But there is no mention of training here in these guidelines, because it has been mentioned in the other guidelines that have been released in 2019.
And what did those guidelines say?
When it comes to infrastructure, like, let's break down what services are required, because obviously not all services can be actually delivered through online medium. If I am a patient and I need to talk to a doctor, so first I need to find a doctor if it's something new, if I don't have a reliable doctor that I can go to, which obviously we have apps for that already. Then second is consultations with the doctor, and I need a good medium. And obviously, the kind of infrastructure for doing this is different in villages as opposed to cities. Obviously, sitting in a city, we are quite used to having reliable internet and electricity, which might not always work. So building in that backup infrastructure. Third is patient records, some kind of digital tool that can digitize all patient records so that they can be sent to the doctor easily. So if you go into any of these bigger hospitals, or if you have ever been part of NHS in the UK, all tests that you do are linked back to your name. And they get stored. So you go to any hospital, any GP in the UK, and they can access all of your health records.
So you don't have to get those stupid files in every clinic.
No, they don't even give you those. They don't even give you the files most times. So, but you need something like that, right? So if you're going to contact a doctor over the phone, the doctor should have access to all of your files. So we need to build that infrastructure. And then finally, I think, then there's a whole, there will be a prescription, how that gets prescribed. That is actually covered in the guidelines that was released. And then finally giving the prescription to somebody and getting the medicine, which I think that part is now being covered by stuff like 1MG and a lot of these other online pharmacy details, right? So that has also been now removed from the supply chain of actually visiting and getting medicine for doctor. The other thing I think apart from the apps is we still need that privacy bill. The data protection bill, because all of this, at all of these points, we are exchanging crucial personal data. And in the absence of the privacy bill, how that data would be used and what happens to it really needs to be codified. So a lot of this hinges upon when that bill comes into practice.
So there's actually quite a daunting checklist of things that need to be cleared. Even though telemedicine has enormous potential in dealing with COVID, it seems like there's a lot of things that we have to do before we can actually effectively use it to deal with COVID, right? So the first thing, of course, being the fact that you need like a pretty sophisticated digital apparatus, like not just in terms of like storing all that data, but also just the infrastructure, making it reliable enough and accessible enough to people that they can use it for telemedicine. But even beyond that, right? So I'm trying to think specifically in terms of COVID now. So in an urban center, it's easy enough for someone to get tested. It's easy enough for them to take the decision to get self-quarantined. They have reliable internet so they can sit and like text their doctor or whatever and get feedback, right? But for someone in a village, I'm just thinking, first of all, getting access to a COVID testing kit in itself might be quite a daunting process. Having, I don't know, like a digital thermometer or even like a mercury thermometer in villages that doctors can look at and make readings from can be an issue. So how do you deal with that kind of last mile sort of infrastructure needed even for telemedicine?
So this one is really a problem that needs to be addressed because, as you correctly said, urban people have a lot more access to telemedicine than rural people, actually. And according to one study that was conducted last year, although the number of active internet users is increasing in India, so overall internet penetration in the country is just 36%, so which is not actually a lot, so to say. Even if the number of rural users is increasing, the disparity is still high between urban and rural. So as we know, most of the rural people, they don't have access to smartphones, not the fancy ones, obviously, but most of them, they use at least the basic smartphones. I have seen it in my native place. I guess if the government could try to provide telemedicine services through facilities that are available at the rural level, like video calling through WhatsApp, just simple text messages, if that could be made possible, obviously the extent of the services that can be provided through WhatsApp or text messaging or even Skype will be limited, but I guess that can be the starting point at least for now.
Okay, so let's actually talk about the nitty-gritties of actually dealing with COVID, right? So let's imagine like a hypothetical scenario where a large number of people in a village have come down with COVID, and the only way to get any kind of medical attention in that village is through telemedicine.
Given
that that is the basic assumption, what kind of network infrastructure do you need? Like how frequently do they need to be checked in by the doctor? How valuable is a doctor's care like over telemedicine for somebody who's suffering from a disease that is this severe? How does the doctor get access to reliable readings on temperature, for example, or blood pressure, that kind of thing? Are there facilities right now in primary healthcare centers that can help with all this? What about pharmacies? How do they get medicines? Are the medicines that you need for COVID available in rural areas? Is the supply chain of healthcare basically something that needs to be thought through in the context of COVID?
I think we have got the purpose of telemedicine a little mixed up here, Anirudh. I think what we need to figure out for the purposes of telemedicine is priorities of diseases that can actually be treated through telemedicine. For a novel disease like COVID, where we are still also trying to understand various aspects of the disease, telemedicine might not be very useful. I mean, it might be useful in figuring out whether there is nothing else and if the patient actually has COVID. But once you know that they have COVID-19, we would ideally like the patient to be in a clinic or in a hospital, primarily because we are learning a lot by looking at the patient, right? And we might lose out on a lot of that data. The idea of doing telemedicine during a time like COVID is twofold. One is you're protecting the doctors from a range of other diseases that they might actually become exposed to. So you might have read about this two doctors in the Mohalla clinics in Delhi who caught coronavirus supposedly from their patients. And the problem now is that because they themselves then reached out to a lot of other patients who had come to see them, those patients are now also exposed. So everyone's under quarantine, right? How telemedicine might have been helpful is that at least some of those other patients who came in could have just called the doctor, suppose if they just needed a prescription being refilled or there was a minor cut or something and that they wanted to have questions about, or had a stomach ache, right? Like, or you have a backache for like a day. So if those patients had stayed at home and instead had the opportunity to call a doctor and ask, what should I do? Then they could have been protected from the virus.
So what Shambhavi said is correct, but then it could also save visits to those patients who think they are experiencing COVID-19 symptoms actually. So instead of just going to see the doctor in the first place, it would be better if they just call up the doctor and tell that they are experiencing cough, but then it is a dry cough or a normal cough. So the doctor could assess whether he needs to actually visit the clinic or not. So, you know, that could help.
Yeah, yeah. So up to the test, you could do telemedicine. But if someone is COVID positive, I mean, if you know they're COVID positive, then don't do telemedicine.
So this brings me to my next question. So obviously, I have been fairly active on Twitter since this pandemic started because I can't tear my eyes away from what is happening. But there were a lot of people in the UK, for example, who have put up experiences of what it's like to actually fight through the coronavirus sitting at home, isolated. And for them, it seems like a big source of support was being able to call up the NHS, report their symptoms, and basically be reassured by someone on the other end of the line, even if they're not a doctor, that these are normal symptoms and they can be dealt with and you just take these medications. And that person perhaps can be, you know, take a judgment call and escalate them to a doctor if necessary, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that seems like another very rich seam for telemedicine in India. Do we have that kind of that layer of trained healthcare professionals who can help with telemedicine in this sense?
I think the situation right now should be like an encouragement for the government to actually start providing training to healthcare professionals so they can deal with this situation.
Yeah. So like the Karnataka state government set up this helpline, right? And the 104. Yeah. I think part of that helpline's role was to address these concerns and figure out if people needed help in getting tested. I don't know how sensitive they were about doing the job. I have not called that helpline. But the idea was the same, that you can call somebody up and say that I'm having these symptoms. Should I have a test done or not? But it actually is a good point, is because the other thing that I think a lot of these people, a lot of us who are in lockdown, are going to need is someone to talk to in terms of maintaining mental health. I'm sure, especially with a lot of these people who have now seeing withdrawal symptoms because they do not have access to alcohol or cigarettes anymore.
Yeah, and it's them to do some pretty crazy things. There was a pair of guys who drank cola spiked with aftershave in Tamil Nadu and ended up dying as a result.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but sorry, continue.
Yeah, so, and these services, particularly because we are still going to be in lockdown for a few more days, these services can actually be provided over the phone. They might not be the most effective mechanism, but at this point of time, we really don't have a choice and these people are in dire need. We can possibly think about, at least for the mental health services, to try and figure out a way of delivering them through telemedicine. The other is obviously for a lot of the non-communicable diseases that people continue to go visit a hospital for. I mean, the hospitals, that's what our situation is, not as dire as Italy or America is, at least parts of America are. But the doctors are going to be stressed because we are in the middle of a pandemic. And every new patient, every that walks into a hospital or a clinic is a possible suspect for them. So they are under a lot of stress, and the more we can minimize that stress for them, the better they are equipped to do their job and help protect our communities.
Talking about mental health and telemedicine, the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, it has actually started a toll-free helpline now in this COVID-19 situation for the people to access psychosocial counseling, actually.
That's interesting. Do we know anything about like the people who are actually operating these phone lines?
There's not much information about it. Just the website mentions there is a toll-free helpline.
Fair enough. It'll be quite interesting to see where state governments go with this, actually, because I'm thinking that a lot of the governments that are that have access to like human resources on the tech front, like Karnataka and Telangana, might at some point, or I think maybe at some point during the next few months, actually turn to telemedicine as a way to kind of ease the stress on the public healthcare system. But all right, I think that gives me a much better understanding of this whole space than when I started out. Thank you both so much for joining me. Thank you, Sneha. You're an absolutely fantastic first episode. Thank you always, as always, Doc, for joining me. And thank you all for listening to All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst. Or our website, takshashila.org.in.